Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Birds of Paradise, a friendship album story. Eula, 1935. Part 3. When Eula was 6 years old, she was finally allowed to join her sisters when they went upstairs to play in the attic. She'd been longing for this day ever since she'd first been made aware that every afternoon while she napped, Delia and Cora ascended the attic stairs to a land of make-believe. Even in the hot summer months, they went up to their hideaway, returning with reports of tea parties and balls, school lessons for their dolls, and magical fairy realms. It was somewhat of a disappointment, then, to climb the stairs and find out that this fairyland of theirs was just a small clearing hidden behind some trunks in the attic's northwest corner. To be sure, the space was whimsically decorated with strings of paper birds dangling from the eaves and a long abandoned rocking chair draped with one of their mother's old quilts. But where were the castles Eula had imagined, the elegant ballrooms? "Why, it's downright plain," she complained to her sisters the first time she saw it.
"Plain?"
Delia sounded shocked. "How can you say such a thing? Can't you see my throne?"
"Or my menagerie,"
Cora added, pointing to the paper birds.
"It's filled with birds given to me by the king of Persia. Can't you hear them singing?"
Eula closed her eyes.
"Oh, I hear them now,"
she lied, not wanting to be exiled.
"They're awful pretty."
"Let me describe them to you one by one," Cora said, taking Eula by the hand.
"I might need you to care for them, should I be called away by my dear friend, Princess Eleonora of France."
Eula allowed herself to be led around by her sister.
"This is my rainbow lorikeet," Cora said,
pointing to one of the largest birds she'd drawn and colored by hand.
"She's a bit timid, so you'll need to speak to her in your quietest voice."
Delia took a seat in the rocking chair and wrapped the quilt around her shoulders as though it were a cape.
"While you two are busy with Cora's birds, I shall order a feast to be laid on the royal banquet table," she said in a queenly voice,
before turning toward the stairwell and calling,
"Cook, we want cakes with mountains and mountains of frosting and lemonade to drink. Immediately, our heads will roll."
Doing her best to join in her sister's play, Eula dutifully praised Cora's birds and ate several servings of invisible cake. After a bit, she began to enjoy herself. But she had the feeling that while her sisters had truly entered another world, that to Cora, her birds were as real as the swallows swooping through the barn, and that Delia could taste the frosting she so delicately licked from her fingers, she herself had remained in the attic, noting the dust motes as they floated past the window on the south side of the room. On the day she turned 11, Delia declared herself too old for their make-believe games and could only occasionally be tempted up the stairs after that. With Delia gone, Cora's imagination became less regal and more bucolic, domestic even. Now Eula could fully imagine the scenes that she and her sister played out. They were pioneer girls preparing for a long winter, or they lived on a farm out west where they raised horses and took care of stray animals. Whatever scenario they imagined, Eula often took the role of mother, cook, or seamstress, even when Cora protested that she could be anything she wanted.
"But this is what I want,"
Eula always replied, often as she was tying on an apron and approaching the small wooden play stove her father had made for her.
"Now, how do you want your eggs this morning?"
Not only did Eula and Cora's pretend play take them into new imaginary worlds, it also took them further away from Delia. They'd always had more in common with one another than with their eldest sister, both of them plain and sensible like their mother, both of them readers who liked to spend time out of doors. If Delia ever noticed Cora and Eula's closeness, she never bothered to comment on it. She was a beautiful peacock, after all, constantly attended to by friends and would-be beaux. It had troubled their mother, who sometimes spoke of it to Eula while they were quilting together. Mother had three sisters, and all four of the girls in her family had remained close. "You girls will need each other more as time goes on," she'd counseled as her needle slipped in and out of the fabric. "I know Delia seems like a butterfly right now, a slight pretty thing flittering about. But butterflies have their uses. They help the flowers grow, for one thing." Eula had always nodded. She'd never been like Cora, who often complained of how foolish Delia was, how trivial her concerns. Eula, too, thought there was more to Delia than met the eye. Yes, she was social, and spent an inordinate amount of time caring about what to wear and how to style her hair, but she could be thoughtful as well. Delia was always careful to cut her dresses so that there would be usable scraps of fabric to give Eula for her quilts, and she was quick to slip the boys candy in church when they began to act restless. But knowing that her sister was a good woman at heart didn't mean they had much in common, so while her bond with Cora had grown even stronger over the years, Eula's connection to Delia was mostly held in place by affection. And that had been enough. True friendship was rare, inside of families and out. Eula knew she was lucky to have a true friend in Cora. She was happy that she and Delia wished each other well and helped each other when help was needed. That, too, could be rare in families. Eula counted it a blessing. Pushing herself out of bed on Saturday morning, Eula wonders if that old wooden stove Father made is still in the attic. Hard to imagine, not with all the grandchildren and great-grandchildren who have slipped up the stairs over the years to see what mysteries await them beneath the eaves. Still, the possibility exists that it's been overlooked, or at least left in place. Maybe Cora knows. "Oh, it's been ages since I've been up there," Cora says as she pours Eula a cup of coffee. "Those steps are so narrow, I'm afraid of falling." "I guess that's how you know you're an old woman. You think about all the ways you might fall down and hurt yourself before you even get out of bed in the morning." Eula laughs as she takes a seat at the table. "It's true that I rely on Maisie more and more when I need something from a high-up or out-of-the-way place. She doesn't think twice about hopping on a chair to pull something down."
"You know, I need to ask one of the nephews to go up to the attic and bring down the last of Mother's trunks," Cora says, pulling a pan of biscuits from the oven. "I think there's at least one or two that still need going through. I don't imagine that there's anything in them other than clothes, but it occurred to me the other day that I've lost track of Mother's wedding quilt. Delia says she doesn't have it." Like an actress who's been waiting in the wings for her cue to enter stage left, Delia appears at the doorway.
"Good morning, girls. I rushed right over as soon as I heard there was a truck parked out here. I just knew it had to be Eula." She pulls off her coat and drapes it on the back of a chair. "So, what are we chit-chatting about this morning?"
Cora waits until her sister crosses the kitchen to the cupboard and pulls out a cup to reply,
"I believe we were discussing how it's good manners to knock on the door before you walk into someone's house."
"Oh, I absolutely agree," Delia says as she picks up the coffee pot from the stove. "That has got to be the absolute worst thing about living in town. People just traipse in and out of our house at all hours."
She pauses to look at Cora.
"Oh, do you mean me? But This is my house as much as it is yours. It belongs to all of us.
That doesn't make it a hotel, nor is it a museum or a warehouse, Cora admonishes. While the house belongs to all of us, it is my home.
Delia takes a seat at the table across from Eula. It's a home in which you live alone, which, as you know, concerns me. What if you were to fall ill or stumble down the cellar steps? If I waited for you to answer my knock, well, who knows what fate might befall you?
If I don't answer your knock, I give you permission to peek through the window, Cora allows.
Delia frowns. We seem to be dancing around the heart of the matter. You haven't seemed yourself lately, Cora, and I'm worried.
She leaned over and put her hand on Eula's. As is Eula. That's why she's come to visit, you see.
I didn't come because I was worried, Eula pointed out, quickly withdrawing her hand. I came because you were worried.
Now I'm worried, Cora interjected. It's not often that the two of you are in cahoots.
I asked Eula to come, Delia says. And overhearing your conversation about taking tumbles down the attic stairs, I'm very happy that I did.
Eula gives Cora a helpless shrug. You seem fine to me, but when Delia wrote that you were ailing, I didn't have any choice but to ride over.
What's this really about, Delia? Cora demands. There's nothing wrong with me, and you know it. I'm not some ancient bag of bones. I'm just older than I once was. Of course I'm going to be careful. One always has to be careful when living alone. You're up to something, sister. You're always up to something.
Delia puts her hand over her heart.
You have wounded me to the core of my being.
Eula and Cora exchange glances. Now they're sure of it. Their sister is always at her most dramatic when she's scheming.
Tell me, Delia, Eula says, carrying her coffee cup to the stove. What do you propose Cora do if she's truly unable to care for herself anymore? Should she move in with you and Jason?
Cora begins to protest, but Eula holds up a hand. I think we should hear Delia out. Certainly she's thought this through.
I have spent many hours pondering the best course of action, Delia says, all business now. I'm not saying that Cora should move out this very minute, but I think it wise that she plan to leave by the end of the year.
Again, Cora begins to protest, and again, Eula quiets her.
I'm waiting to hear where it is you propose Cora go. And what will we do with the house after she's gone?
Frank's youngest girl, Lila, is getting married in August, so there'll be a room at his house.
I am sure he and Luann will be happy to accommodate Cora.
As for the house, we'll sell it, of course.
There's already been some interest in the property. Eula glances at Cora, who raises an eyebrow in reply. Here we go, the sister's expression seemed to say. Now we're getting to the heart of the matter.
Has someone approached Jason about it? Cora asks Delia.
Delia gives a casual shrug.
Oh, it comes up now and again. You know how it is when you're mayor. People are always telling you their plans for new businesses and the like. It won't always be the Depression, you know. Smart businessmen are planning for the future.
What would they want with this house? Cora wants to know.
I don't know who on earth would be interested in this house, Delia says. It's a million years old and about to fall down.
The land, on the other hand, is extremely valuable, or it might be one day.
As Jason likes to say, buy land. They're not making it anymore.
I believe Mark Twain said it first, Cora informs her sister.
I wish you would just come out with it, Delia. What scheme have you and Jason concocted and why?
Why, Cora, Delia exclaims, you make us sound downright corrupt.
But if you must know, Wilbur Mason is interested in buying the farm lock, stock, and barrel. He thinks that Homerville could be the next Akron. Eula has her doubts about this, but she wants to hear Delia out. I'm not saying we should sell, but if we did, you realize that the money would be divided amongst the six of us, right?
Of course.
Delia shakes her head as though she can't believe how silly Eula is being.
Naturally, Jason and I would get a little extra as the ones in charge of the sale. We'd be the agents, I suppose, and agents always get a percentage.
Cora rises from the table.
I've had enough of this discussion. This is my home. I cared for Mother in her final years, and it was her wish that I live here until I decided to go elsewhere. For your information, Delia, I'm never going elsewhere. I'm staying right here in this house for the rest of my days.
With that, Cora leaves the room, and a moment later, her footsteps sound on the stairs. Delia's complexion has turned a concerning shade of pink. Eula sits next to her and puts a hand on her sister's arm. Honestly, Delia, all of this is a little, well, I hate to say it, but it all feels a little crazy to me. With that, Delia seems to collapse in her seat, her head sinking to her chest. After a few moments, she looks up at Eula and says,
Last November, Roger Hesser talked Jason into investing in a feed business that failed before it even got started. We'll survive, but just barely.
She gives Eula a faint smile. But if we sold the farm, we'd be okay, even after dividing the money six ways. She smiles again, this time giving her sister a beseeching look. Eula is familiar with that smile. Delia always uses it when she's trying to get her way. It's warm and winning, a smile that asks, Don't you want to help me? And mostly people did want to help Delia, especially back when she was young and still the prettiest girl in town. Even now, it's hard to resist her. But Eula does her best, all the same. I don't think that would be fair to Cora, do you? Her life is in this house. Her joy is in this house. Delia is quiet for another moment.
I don't know what we're going to do, Eula. We're in trouble.
I wish you had just said that in the first place, Eula gently scolds, instead of all this nonsense about Cora being ill. I knew you'd come if I told you Cora wasn't herself, Delia says. She sniffs and wipes her eyes. I knew that was the fastest way to get you back home. Eula nods. She supposes this is true. Still, I would have come if you told me you were in trouble.
Yes, I know, Delia says, but you would have taken longer to get here.
Eula takes a deep breath. She knows her sister is right. Her first concern in this family has always been Cora. But from what she can see, Cora doesn't need her help in the slightest. Delia, on the other hand, has never needed her family more. Still, Eula doesn't know what to do, other than to take her sister's hand again and say, We'll figure something out, I promise. Delia gives Eula's hand a squeeze and whispers, Thank you, so softly that Eula can barely hear her. Still, for the first time in a long time, Delia actually seems to mean what she says. Eula takes each of the attic steps slowly. As a child, she scampered up without bothering to grab hold of the railing, but she can still remember how long it took Mother to make her way upstairs,
no matter how frantically they called, "Hurry, Mother! We want to show you something!" Now she understands how easy it would be to stumble backwards and the price you might pay for your misstep. The attic runs the length of the house. A light has been installed since Eula's day, a single light bulb lodged in a socket fixed to a beam. There's no need for it this morning, though. The sun streaming through the south side window illuminates the entire room. It's emptier up here than Eula expected. She thought there'd be more of the extended family's flotsam and jetsam spread about. Before her siblings began using the house as a place to store their extraneous belongings, they came up here to ransack the trunks and boxes for whatever they might need. Tablecloths, plates, some childhood memento they wanted to share with their own children. Eula had done the same. Mother was happy to have the old things put to use, the sleds and the heavy cast-iron irons, the quilts and sheets. Eula has come to see if she can find the old wooden stove from her childhood games. If it's there, she'll take it home and clean it up for baby Jean to play with it in a year or two. But as she fully emerges from the stairwell into the attic proper, she has the feeling she's looking for something else as well. She laughs when she realizes that she's halfway hoping to find Dan up here. She can just imagine him sitting in Father's old creaky desk chair, shaking his head and saying, "Well, Eula Jean, Delia and Jason sure have gotten themselves into a pickle." That they have, Eula thinks, and she feels badly for them. But she's also mad that Delia got her out to the home place under false pretenses and expects Cora to leave her lifelong home to get her out of the mess she and Jason have made of their finances. Sighing, Eula makes her way to the northwest corner of the attic. But, as she suspected, the little stove is gone. She wonders who has it. One of the nieces, or great-nieces, surely, and while Eula is sad not to find her old toy, she's happy at the thought of another little girl cooking up make-believe bacon and eggs for a table full of dolls and teddy bears. Something in the corner catches her eye, and upon closer inspection, Eula realizes it's one of Cora's exotic paper birds peeking out of one of Mother's old trunks. Lifting the lid, she carefully extracts the creature, its colors faded, but still remarkable all the same. Had Mother saved it, or had some child or another hidden it with Mother's things? Eula digs to see if any more of the birds survived, and her fingers brush against a soft bit of fabric. A dress, she thinks, but when she peers inside, she discovers a quilt nested at the very bottom of the trunk, under several layers of clothing. Eula tenderly lifts it out, and a broderie purse quilt unfurls, replete with a menagerie of birds spilling across its expanse. It's not Mother's wedding quilt, but it's old all the same, and a musty scent rises off of it. Well, a good washing and an afternoon spent outside hanging on the line will take care of that, Eula thinks as she folds the quilt in half and then in half again, tucking the paper bird inside the layers. She wonders if this is one of the quilts that the woman visiting from Richmond made. Perhaps she'd given it to Mother as a gift. Won't Cora be pleased by this quilt and all of its fine feathered specimens? This will make a fresh start to the day, Eula decides as she takes the first step down the attic stairs. They can pin the paper bird to the wall and wash and hang out the quilt, and then Eula will drive Cora to town for lunch. Why, it's been ages since they've done something fancy like that. Not that Grimes Cafe is the least bit fancy. Eula takes another step down. Only this time she steps too far out, and suddenly she's falling, the quilt tumbling down the stairs before her, Cora's bird taking to the air. Right before the world goes dark, Eula thinks, I had no idea those birds could fly. End of part 3 of Birds of Paradise, a friendship album story. We'll be back next week with part 4. See you then. Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.